Hey guys, are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/bball. That's ZipRecruiter.com/bball. Welcome to the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore, at Matt Moore CBS on Twitter, or if you want to catch me because I now have internet again in my house, I'm at HP Basketball. I just recorded a great 20 minutes with James Herbert at Outside of the NBA, but because nothing in my house is working as it should since I moved into this new place, I lost the audio. So we're going to kick it up back up again. We're going to take some Twitter questions. To catch you up on what you would have heard, basically we talked about the Warriors. They won the championship. I don't know if you guys caught that, but they won the NBA Finals 4-1. James thinks that it was really great, excellent, high-level execution basketball. I did not. I thought it was sloppy. I thought it was in large part really revealing of how far the Cavaliers were just simply not what they kind of pretended to be. That really just came down to they were never a good defensive team like we kind of identified them to be. We talked about how the real last question for them is, how are teams going to, you know, catch up on what the Warriors do, which is not just play small, shoot awesome, etc., but the way they share the ball and everything. And it would have been a really great conversation, but you're never going to hear it. Instead, we're going to do some podcast questions that we got on Twitter, and I'm very excited to do this because we need some energy right now, because right now I'm a fuming ball of anger because so many things in my house are broken. So, James
Herbert. Maybe we'll get a question that allows us to rehash the whole conversation we just had. We'll see.
James Herbert at Outside the NBA. Ben DeBose asked, please address the stupidity of thinking the addition of Chris Paul is not a good idea. What Ben's referring to is a report out of the Los Angeles Times that says that Chris Paul is going to entertain offers. He's going to at least go to the table and listen to the Rockets and Nuggets.
This is in addition to the Spurs and the Clippers.
So it's going to come down to the Spurs and the Clippers. This is basically LaMarcus Aldridge with the Suns and the Raptors.
Hey, the Suns were really close.
They were really close.
We heard Aldridge talk about that.
And so many, you know, so many teams, you know, like just very many things. Like the Suns would have been way better off. The Spurs would have been way better off if that happened. Anyway, Chris Paul and the Rockets would not work to me. That does not make sense. Chris Paul is about precision. It's about control. It's about making the right play. He has to be in a system with structure, and he has to be on a team that plays defense, or he's going to be the same miserable person on the court that he has been in Los Angeles. You have to put him into a situation where he is not responsible for the other players on the floor, where the system takes care of itself to a degree, and there's a high level of discipline and accountability. Houston is not that. I like Houston.
So you want him to go to San Antonio is essentially what you're saying. Anywhere aside from San Antonio is bad.
He needs to go to San Antonio. Denver is hilarious. So, okay. Here's like the Denver thing.
I seem to recall a similar rumor last year.
Josh Kroenke has gotten in with the Banana Boat Bros. And that doesn't mean that he actually is like, oh, hey, you guys are going to come play for me. It just means that Josh Kroenke is, like, in the circle of the Banana Boat Bros. And so he had a really good meeting with Wade last year, and there's two lines of thought. One is that Wade basically was doing him a favor and was never going to sign there, and no one believes that. Like, a lot of people were just like, that was never going to happen. He was never going to sign with Denver. He was doing them a favor, and he said very nice things. It was like a PR move to try and rehabilitate the Nuggets as a free agency destination. For whatever reason, Wade did that for him, and this would seem to be in kind of the same vein, because, like, Chris Paul with Nikola Jokic and a bunch of young dudes makes zero sense. Like, it does not make any sense whatsoever. So neither of those things really makes sense. Look, if the Rockets had the opportunity.
Wouldn't he be like a basketball Twitter hero, though?
Yes.
If he had every option in the world and he was like, I'm going to Denver.
I'm going to Denver.
I love that Jokic kid. I would love it. We would all love it.
He would be a hero in my universe because I would get to cover him for a year. And then he would hate me because I would just pepper his ass with questions. I think, look, if Houston can get him, you have to get him because he's Chris Paul.
That was what I was going to say. Like,
you don't say no. It just doesn't make any sense for Chris Paul. And then again, it's also like, you know, look, James Harden is like the very definition of ball dominant is James Harden. And so how are you possibly going to fit Chris Paul into that system? It in no way makes sense, and yet you have to do it if you're the Rockets because you're like, hey, we can get Chris Paul. It just doesn't.
So you're saying this
sense.
Would be just like signing Jeremy Lin to play with James Harden. That's your stance.
That's not my stance. It's very much Chris Paul, but it just doesn't make any sense to me, and I don't really get it. He's going to go to either the Spurs or the Clippers. And
hey man, if the Rockets if they wanted to get better defensively and they wanted to take some pressure off of James Harden this summer.
Do you know how mad, like, Patrick Beverley would legitimately be mad? Like, he would call Daryl Morey and be like, he's not better than me. That's what Patrick Beverley would say.
I don't know that he'd say that, but no, I don't know that he'd want to be Chris Paul's backup either.
No, he would. I have hashtag sauces that would tell me that was exactly what would happen. That Patrick Beverley would be livid that happened.
I love Patrick Beverley.
I love him too. He's great. Jan Studebaker asks, are we taking for granted how good a place the league is in right now? It's financially stable, the game is entertaining and high level.
I say yes, but you go on.
Yeah, I mean, for you, it's like everything is like golden. It's just like, it's been a miraculous rise of the NBA, one might say. I've been around Marcus Thompson a lot the last couple of weeks.
You got the book yet?
So I haven't had a chance. I was going to go to his book signing when I was out there, and instead I took a six-hour nap. So that was my decision. I am going to get through the LeBron book, and then I'm going to read Golden.
Okay.
Look, the league is in a great place compared to where it's been in the past. So, you know, it's been on the verge of bankruptcy. It's been on the verge. Like, it's had games on tape delay on CBS, America's most watched network, by the way. It's had these times of real concern. Like, the late 70s were a disastrous time, and the league was very much just hanging on by a thread. And it's in a great place now. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. Everyone's making money. The players are making money. The owners are making money. The fans are getting screwed because that's how it works. Just in terms of how much everything costs. Like, think about what the NBA costs for fans. It's several hundred dollars to go to a game if you take, like, a family of four. It's at least a couple hundred bucks because, you know, even if you get cheap tickets, you get parking and concessions, and you're going to get dinged on both of those things. It's at least a couple hundred bucks. It's over $100 at minimum. League Pass is $200 a year for a product that only works some of the time. Like, I mean, it's, the gear is insanely expensive. It's expensive on the fans, but everyone's making money. And there are more stars now at a higher level than there ever has been. Like, Steve Kerr's response during the NBA Finals about all the criticism from former players was incredible, where he was like, yeah, it's weird. It's just like the one place where things get worse with time. Like, that's the one area where people get slower and less athletic and less skilled is the NBA. The one area. I was standing right there for it, and it was a great.
It was perfect.
It was a great answer for that. So,
I want to kind of build on that, though, because, like, I think in terms of the talent and the skill level of the players, like, if you popped, like, Karl Anthony Towns or Kevin Durant if you popped one of those guys into, like, an 80s or, like, 90s basketball game, you'd just be like, what is this alien? Like, how is somebody this tall doing this stuff? And now there's, like, a ton of those guys. Like, that's now big men are coming into the league, and, like, you're expected – the number one most important thing is, like, protecting the rim, pick and roll defense. And then you're beyond that. It's like, well, can he shoot? Can he, like, guard wing players? Like, this is where the league is going. Like, you have to be skilled to survive. You have to play both ends to survive. And because of the Warriors, it's also getting to a point where, like, you kind of have to pass. Like, you kind of have to have basketball like you. Like, the league is going to a place where I think the right things are valued. And it's not just one-on-one play. It's not just brute force and physicality. Like, you really need skill, and you need smarts, and you need unselfishness. And the teams that are just dominated by, like, one guy, like, they don't get anywhere. And the teams that just try to rough you up, like, they don't get anywhere. Like, it's... I don't think there has ever been a higher level of skill in the game from a player perspective, and from a team perspective. I think, like, I just, in terms of the product on the floor, there are plenty of issues that we have in terms of, you know, the schedule, and like there's like little things in the officiating that bother people, and like the resting during the season, and all these things that come up. But like that's small potato. Like when you think of the bigger picture of where the league is, like I do think we should like stop and appreciate that, because like the best players I think are like better than they've ever been. And I think also when you look at the worst players, like the role players, I think you also like you have to play harder than you used to stay on the court, and you have to play a sort of smarter game than you used to enable to stay on the court, especially in the playoffs.
I agree, unless you're on the Clippers bench. That's absolutely true.
hey, shout out to Maurice Spates.
Shout out to Mo Spates.
Mo Spates took 3.4 three-pointers a game this season. Do you know that? I did a piece today on shooters in free agency, and I was looking at his numbers. He just, up until like last, like the year before this season, he like didn't shoot threes at all. And I was just like, wow, he is just no conscience. It is a very weird and wonderful thing that I did not see coming.
Karl Anthony Towns would be like a bigger Horace Grant back in the 80s. And the reason I say that is not about Towns' talent. It's about how badly, like how much guys were just slotted into time periods. Like up until 2000, 2005, like guys, if you were Karl Anthony Towns, you're like, oh, you're going to be like Horace Grant. You just need to rebound and make like put back buckets. And
right.
And if it was like, well, but he's like a really gifted passer and he can work from the elbow. No, that's not what big guys do. Like, it would just be no. Like, Anthony Davis would be considered kind of like a freak of nature. Like, they wouldn't know how to use him.
It'd be like, he doesn't have a position.
Right.
He doesn't have a role. And I mean, and that's what I'm, like, I don't, like, when I say this stuff about today's game, that's not me, like, in the past. Like, a lot of these players, like, it's the reason why the historical comparisons are tough and unfair is because, like, they had no reason to work on that part of their game if their coaches never wanted it from them, if there was no precedent. Like that's what Kerr was talking about. Like the game evolves. These guys have to take something from who came before them and build on it. And if that wasn't a part of the game, if it wasn't a part of the culture, if there were no, if there was no room to experiment with regards to like what coaches want at different levels, like you're not going to do that. Like if it's not fair to look at like the amount of three pointers that like Larry Bird took and compare them to the amount of three pointers that like, I don't know, like name like a random like stretch four that isn't even a start. Like it's just not the same game. Larry Bird could have been way more prolific. Like a lot of these guys that didn't even shoot threes, like Michael Jordan, you can't compare his three-point shooting to like LeBron James's in any like real way, because if Jordan came up in this era, he would probably shoot a ton more threes because the game changed. And I'm just saying, I think the game is better. I think the game has evolved, and that's why the players are better. It's not because those other guys weren't capable of it. If different things were prioritized in their era, then they would have worked on those different things, but they didn't.
Yeah, there's all these incredible players that you can see every single night. And if you want to see those players, you know the best way to be able to see them, James?
SeatGeek?
SeatGeek. It's the smartest way to find tickets for the basketball games you want to see this season, or next season, or the baseball games, or any of them. There's nothing like being in the building for the biggest games. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for great value. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience.
Not the bad value you were talking about before. Great
exactly.
value.
With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually just used SeatGeek to get some tickets at this outdoor venue in Colorado. I'm super excited about it. SeatGeek is designed to make the ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, Buck. SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. And every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code IEYE today. That's promo code I for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All right, next question is from Bharath Ravindran. And he asks, if Hayward signs with the Celtics, should they trade to the 2008 Nets pick and other young assets for a quality center like DeAndre? That's an interesting idea. I think if the Clippers blow up this summer, and by this summer I mean in 15 days, then I definitely think that the Celtics are a team that should aggressively pursue DeAndre Jordan. He fits a lot of what they need to do. I think you can, like, Al Horford has been a center. He's good as a center. You can play him at four and be fine. Add a rebounder and shot blocker like DeAndre Jordan to balance out the size problems that you have with your backcourt. Add Gordon Hayward. And yeah, now you're really cooking with something. Now you're definitely taking the Cavs to like 6-7 games. You're in it then. You are in competition because a LeBron may wind up slipping at some point. It's going to happen eventually and you can make the finals and making the finals will be
slipping
a big
or
deal.
Leaving.
Like, don't stop trying just because the Warriors are probably going to win because you can't predict the future. I made an argument today on a post that said basically I compared trying to come up with an idea of how to beat the Warriors with Fermi's paradox. And Fermi's paradox says basically, look, there's all of this data and research. There's all of this mathematical formula that suggests that there has to be intelligent life in the universe beyond Earth somewhere. The problem is there is no evidence that life exists. None. So this thing that almost should exist, we have no evidence there of it happening. The Warriors are much the same way. Where, yes, there's got to be some combination that could beat them. We just have no evidence for what that might be. But that doesn't mean that you should stop trying. So yeah, I think if the Celtics get, look, you'll have Fultz, you'll have a guy for the future, you're still going to have Jaylen Brown, you're still going to have a young core. Go ahead and make some swings, make a full run, and try and close the gap. Make a run with a team and build something, a team that, you know, fans are going to remember and say, like, that was a great Celtics team, even if they didn't win a title.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I would want to know exactly what the package was before being like, yeah, they should do that, because that 2018 pick could be amazing. That could be a franchise player. There are a couple of really highly regarded players in that draft. Not immediately like, yeah, Porter and Doncic.
As a Missouri fan, so, I don't know what to do with my hands. I do not know what to do with my hands with this kind of an NBA draft pick going to my favorite school. It's crazy.
That's why I'm not just like, yeah, all in, just like trade a few assets, whatever. Cause like that asset could be a franchise player. So maybe, and I certainly understand the logic for getting somebody like DeAndre Jordan. He would fit incredibly well. Free throw shooting aside, like the guy would fix their rebounding issues immediately. He would be an incredible lob target. I think he's still underrated as an offensive player. And defensively, he would obviously be the anchor that they don't exactly have right now.
Kirk Seriousface, my good friend, asks, I'm terrified that my Mavs are considering splitting 70% of the cap between Barnes, Noel, and Drew Holiday. Help? Yeah, I got nothing for you. Look, the Mavericks are going to try and be good. I think they should try and be good. They're never going to be bad enough with Dirk around for them to be an absolute disaster. If it comes to that point, then I think Cuban won't tank, but he'll gently slide into terribleness to pick up a number one pick. But until that happens, look, they got Barnes. They got a lot of money invested in him. You want to build around him. You think Noel is good. You got a top flight coach. Drew Holiday is really good. I think that team is going to be in the mix for the West 8 seed if they get Drew Holiday. I think they will. It's a lot of money. None of these deals are long anymore. You know, it's like, look, Barnes is on a 4-year deal. So, and 1 year's already off the books. So you've only got 3 more years of Barnes. If you go through next year and it's a disaster, you're trading Barnes with only 2 years left on his contract. That's swallowable for teams. You can move that. Nerlens Noel can sign for a bigger deal. He'll be tougher, I think, to keep. Drew Holiday can probably get a discount because he comes with a lot of baggage in terms of his injury history. So I think there are worse things for the Mavs than that possibility. It's going to be interesting to see, like, who's going to be the real disaster now? Because I don't think the Kings are going to be as much of a disaster because, like, this team is just young and stupid now. And that's just fun. Like, they're just a fun team now. Because they don't have any expectations without Cousins. They're still going to be kind of a mess. I'm hopeful that new GM is going to actually stabilize them a little bit. But I think it's hard to kind of identify who the disaster teams are going to
be. I don't necessarily see a disaster team unless the Clippers lose everybody.
Yeah.
In which case, that's the disaster team.
But Jerry West. So.
Yeah, true. But to respond to Kirk's question, like, the one thing about the Jrue Holiday rumor that I would pump the brakes on a little is, like, let's see what happens in the draft first. Because I think there's a pretty decent chance they wind up taking Ntilikina or they wind up taking Dennis Smith. And if you wind up with one of those guys, do you want to put them on the bench for the next 4 years? Or do you, like, maybe he thinks they can play with Jrue Holiday, which is certainly possible, and Ntilikina can play both positions, and Holiday can guard twos. So maybe you can do them both. But from a team building perspective, like, I could see them just saying, we're going to find our point guard in the draft and we're going to try to do other things in free agency. I don't think the Holiday thing is necessarily a sure thing.
Yeah, and, you know, the Pelicans could pay through their nose to keep him too, because they really need him.
And I think they probably will. Like, I think that's still the most likely result there. Just because they were talking about that as, like, a big three after the Cousins trade. Like, they really want to, like, really part of their job is to convince Cousins that this is a place he should stay. Like, that's part of it, right? They can't just be bad next year. And without Holiday, if they don't get a good replacement, that team could be really bad.
What's the best thing you ate in Cleveland is a question from Chris Manning. The same place that gave me the terrible salad had a strawberry shake that is the best I have had in my life. It was perfection.
Wow.
It was perfection. It was just perfection. That was excellent. I also ate at the Greenhouse Tavern, which was similarly excellent. I had an excellent dinner there with our former colleague, and he and I went to town on small plates. I had crispy chicken wings confit. We had beef carpaccio. What else do I have? Oh, they had fried chicken, which was just insane. Just crazy good fried chicken. It was Tabasco fried chicken. So, like, it was incredible. It was just amazing. Great, great meal there. And I also got tacos at Barrio. They were my late night savior, and they stayed open for us to make sure that we got fed after the games, and that was really appreciated. So shout out to Cleveland with some great food after my disastrous tweet last week criticizing it, which there were sirens going off around the city, and everyone in Cleveland got on their phones at once.
I believe you were trending in Cleveland.
I was.
I don't know if that's true, but I'm going to say you were.
Troy Sampson asks, what is the league-wide perception of Bucks ownership waffling over the GM hire? Is Zanuck being left out to dry? I haven't called much about the situation. All I know is, like, there's a lot of feeling that Jason Kidd is not necessarily running the shots, so there's some instability there. So that's an interesting situation because there's a lot at stake there. Like, Giannis is the real deal. So they need to get, like, a stable set of circumstances under control. Hammond was a great hire. Like, that was a home run hire for Orlando. Like, that was a really good get. Thought they did a really good job there. It'll be interesting to see what Milwaukee does, though, because that's a talented team.
Look, I don't know that I can perfectly capture the league-wide perception, but my perception is this is really confusing, and it doesn't seem like they've had a coherent plan. It doesn't seem like everybody's on the same page. I was kind of surprised that there even was a search after Hammond left, because I was under the impression that Zanuck was brought in to succeed Hammond. Like, that was, to me, that was already agreed upon. That's what I thought was going to happen. I think that's what most people around the league thought was going to happen. And we heard that it was, I mean, we heard the same thing everybody heard, that it was a two-person race. And one of them dropped out of the race, so that should have meant Zanuck got the job. And that's not what's happening. It doesn't mean that he won't eventually win, but it seems like he keeps getting kind of cut off when you would expect him to just get the job. So I'm a little confused as to what is going on within the organization politically and what they're actually looking for, is the way I'd answer that question. I don't know about the league-wide perception, though.
You know, they're trying to make the right hire, and, you know, with it's with basketball, hiring is important. It's, you gotta have the right players on the court and the right guys in the front office, and you know, that sharp outside shooter or power rebounder. It's the difference between winning and losing. And you know what, James? Business isn't any different. Your company needs the right people to be the best. And do you know where you go to find that top talent?
You tell me, Matt.
ZipRecruiter.com. You can't find the best candidates by posting your job on just one site. You need to post them on all the top job sites. And now you can with ZipRecruiter. At ZipRecruiter.com.
Somebody tell Milwaukee.
I know. They need to get on ZipRecruiter. At ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with one click. Then, their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your position. And that's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. This is a big deal because, like, I have been a person trying to hire someone for a position before. In my younger days, I owned a business. And trying to find the right people was a disaster. You're, like, getting referrals from friends of friends and all of it's a nightmare. And ZipRecruiter is the exact tool that you need to get the right hire. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in under 24 hours. That's crazy. It took weeks to get the right people when I was trying to hire. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes nationwide. And right now, our listeners can start forming their own winning team on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/bball. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BBALL. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/bball. All right. So next
I thought you were going to say super team there.
Super team. You're going to find your own super team. Andy KH Lou says, talk about the Warriors being underrated, please. Thanks. I'll take my answers off Twitter. I hate you, Andy. Bandwagon Cavs fan, who's actually Rockets Intellect, one of my favorite followers on Twitter. Why is a cakewalk considered difficult? I usually consider walking whilst holding a cake to be quite a chore. Excellent question. That is a phenomenal question. Let's consult the Google.
That's the best question we've got so far.
Let's consult the Google. Why is it called a cakewalk? Right now, there's some like know-it-all on this listening to this podcast in his car screaming out the answer. From Slate.com, the cakewalk was originally a 19th century dance invented by African-Americans in the antebellum South. It was intended to satirize the stiff ballroom promenades of white plantation owners who favored the rigidly formal dancers of European high society. This went in a direction I was not anticipating. We're going to ahead and slide on. The little guy four, a plucky Celtics follower of mine, asks, you guys buy in this Jackson the Boston stuff? Look, I've heard from like the lottery, the thing I kept hearing was Josh Jackson's going to hang around. He's going to hang around and he's going to be in talks the number one pick with like a week to go. And here we are, we're under a week, but listen, I've also seen this before. There's always that guy who's like, he could be the number one pick, but he's not. Like, it's going to be Markelle Fultz. I feel confident it's going to be Fultz. Ball, I don't know about. But I see no scenario in which Danny Ainge passes up Markelle Fultz for Jackson. I just do not see it.
I'm with you. I think it's Fultz. I don't have anything particularly witty to say about that either. Like, I think he's the most complete player. And if there was somebody that was going to shock the world and become the number one pick at the last second, I think it'd be Lonzo, not Josh Jackson.
That'd be weird too. That I do not like. If they did that, oh, I would have takes. I'd have many takes.
I don't think it's likely. I just think Ball's the sort of player where I think you could talk yourself into him as like such a special prospect that it's worth it. If you stack up Fultz and Jackson, I don't understand how you wind up picking Jackson.
Eat Sleep Hoops asks, can OKC sign Patty Mills to play with and without Russ? 12 mil? 15 mil? Should OKC move Kanter for 40 cents on the dollar to get wing help? Well, the answer to the latter is yes. They should move Kanter absolutely to get wing help. I don't think that they're going to have the cap space, or they're just not going to be in a position, I don't think, to get Mills. I think Mills is going to get... Mills may end up taking a bench position, but I think he's going to make starter money. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the right situation, he could be an actual starter. I think he could start in Philly for sure and make starter money. But I think what you're talking about, I mean, if he stays in San Antonio, that's probably the result, right? Unless, I mean, Parker could be out at the beginning of the season, but he'd probably be the starter unhealthy. But yeah, it's time for him to make start. I mean, he's a starting caliber player, regardless of if he's going to serve as kind of like a six-man role. The one thing I want to add for that question, too, is like, Cantor for a wing? Yeah, sure. But like, look, go up and down the league. Like, would Washington like to trade Gortat or Mahimi for a wing? Uh-huh. Like, would, I don't know, like, would the Raptors like to trade Jonas Valanciunas for a wing? Like, a good wing? Sure.
At this point, the Raptors...
Brook Lopez in Brooklyn? Like, all these guys. Like, Vucevic in Orlando? Like, I think it's almost impossible these days to trade a big guy for an actual solid wing player. You have to find like a really snug fit to make any sense. There are just way too many big men.
I want to move on because I don't want to deal with your big man slander.
It's not slander. I appreciate the work of a good big man. I'm just saying like the league is like there's not enough wings for every team, and every team seems to have an abundance of big men.
Also,
look at how the finals ended. It's like 3 years in a row we've seen the finals end with like teams just not playing centers.
Also, the Raptors should look to trade Jonas Valanciunas for Enes Kanter. That's what should happen.
Ugh.
They might both be better. That trade actually might make some sense. What do you think the Cavs are going to try and do to improve the roster? From Proxy_Tank. Paul George, ... Is that even remotely realistic? I don't think so. I don't think if you're the Pacers, you're like, oh yeah, we can rebuild around Kevin Love. No, you want you'd rather just talk to the Lakers and be like, just give us two. Just give us two in garbage. It's fine. That's like better than picking up Kevin Love. And I think Kevin Love, had the best season of his career and was phenomenal this season. I just don't think you can build a team around him with him as like your number one guy. I just think we've seen too much that shows that's just not the case. I don't know what they do. That's the thing is, as I wrote about this after, is I think LeBron knows that too. I think LeBron knows like there's nothing that they can do. There's nothing realistically that they can do. I'm worried that LeBron's going to go into the summer and he's going to go vacation with Melo and then come back and be like, trade Love for Melo. That'll do it. And then they're going to get worse. Like, that to me is a realistic possibility.
I don't like that possibility. Played too well. What? Love played too well to revisit that. Like, I think I would probably still be against it if Love had the year that he'd had the season before, the season before that, but I would at least understand it. To do it after this season, I get that you're like a little more versatile defensively. Like, I get that, but I don't think that's enough of a reason to do it. I just think Love's a better player. As for what the Cavs do, I mean, I wrote about this and I don't see any good obvious options out there. I think there's enough of a gap between them and the Warriors for them to kind of entertain pretty much everything. And that means like, I'd want to know what the market was for Tristan Thompson. I'd want to know what the market was for Kevin Love, maybe even for Irving. I'd want to know it was out there, but I just, after seeing what they did in the last three games, like, I think they have enough to, like, kind of challenge the Warriors and push them. We at least saw that. So I think they'll probably wind up talking themselves into bringing back a pretty similar team with some tweaks. Like, it's not even a guarantee they're going to be able to, like, keep Kyle Korver around. Like, he can make more money elsewhere. It's a really interesting and tough one because it's so easy for us to point out their flaws and what they need. Like, it's really easy to be like, yeah, they need better wing players. And, yeah, they need more two-way players. But I don't see obvious trades to get that done. And they're a really good team as is, and they just have no flexibility. So LeBron can make it clear that he wants major changes and they could be forced into doing something. But if they do that, I don't know that they get better. I don't know that there's a Kevin Love trade out there that makes them better. I don't know that there's a Tristan Thompson trade out there that makes them better. I think their best hope for improvement is internal improvement and then getting some veterans to take discounts because they want to play with LeBron. And I don't even really want to say anymore because, like, like ring chasing veteran. Like, I think if you're a true ring chaser, you're probably signing with the Warriors at this point. But if you want to play with LeBron, if you want to see what that's like, maybe there are a couple of guys they can get to do that. But traditionally, it's easier to do that with like buyout guys than it is actually in the summer, with the exception of like a David West the past couple of years. So, I know that sounds really bleak, but I think I think it's probably gonna look really similar next year.
Why are we gonna watch anyway?
What?
I'm very tempted to be like, why are we even gonna watch next year? But it's like there's lots to watch. There'll be lots to watch.
Come on.
Tough, man. Like this team is great, and I don't see any way of anybody building a team to beat them. I don't think anything slows the train down. Nothing stops the money train. 100%. They're good.
You ever see that movie Money Train?
I did.
Not very good.
Oh man. Our former colleague is going to have words for you. I'm going to have to call you out on Twitter on that one.
All right.
That's not going to go over well.
In fairness, I haven't seen it since like it came out. I just don't really have fond memories of it.
Maybe it's better than I've seen it many times. I have seen it
really
many times. Yes. I'll watch anything. I'll watch anything with Woody Harrelson. Anything.
So
my favorite Woody Harrelson movie is Play It to the Bone. Have you seen that?
I don't think I did.
It's him and Antonio Banderas.
Was it like a boxing movie or something?
Yes. So I think that in actuality, the Rocky movies are pretty stupid. I just think that they're cliche at this point. I think that they exemplified a cliche to the point where now watching it feels like a cliche. It's like retroflective cliché-ness. And so this one it's Antonio Banderas, Woody Harrelson, Lolita Davidovich plays the girlfriend who has a relationship with both of them. Tom Sizemore is in it. Lucy Liu is this random person that they meet on this road trip. It is crazy. Robert Wagner is in it. There are cameos by Mike Tyson and Tony Curtis and Wesley Snipes and Kevin Costner. It is Andrew Carey. It is amazing. It's just about these two, like, semi-pro boxers that get a call that there was a cancellation for a heavyweight fight, and they need an undercard. And so they call these two guys and are like, if you can get here, you get X amount of dollars and a shot at the title. So they have to drive from Los Angeles to Vegas with this girl to get to this
fight.
So
it's like a caper.
No. Like, it's weird because they're going to fight each other. So they're constantly jabbing back and forth at each other. And the dialogue is supremely great, and the fight sequence is flawless. I cannot recommend Play It to the Bone enough. And I don't even like boxing movies.
All right.
That's my take.
That's our recommendation of the show.
That's my take. Here's one. Malik Monk praises triangle offense after workout with Knicks. Malik Monk's got to go to the Knicks. Like, this is just preordained. This has to happen. Malik Monk has to be a Knick.
I kind of think it's going to be Ntilikina.
You like the Ntilikina kid, huh?
He's a triangle point guard.
Yeah.
He can guard two positions. He is not ball dominant. He is tall. And I think he's a good passer. He's a high basketball IQ guy. Maybe he's not even there. But that's always seemed like the most logical Knicks pick to me. I mean, Monk could also be, but like, I'd be a little bummed to see him go to the Knicks. I'd love to see him just run a ton of pick and roll. Which he won't do if he's in New York. He also does kind of fit the profile. Like, he's a big guard who's smart. I think it is funny just seeing, like, this is like a yearly thing now where, like, prospects go to New York and then they give a bunch of quotes about how much they love and respect the triangle. And it's like, what else are they going to say?
Yeah, it would be pretty funny if a guy came out of the prospect meeting and was just like, they kept talking about the triangle and I don't really get it. That'd be amazing. Somebody was like, I don't really understand what they're talking about, but there's...
It'd also be honest, yeah, probably.
Right? No one knows what it is. Carmelo kept giggling during the entire time I was there, and they were talking about the triangle and the workout.
That would have been last year. Carmelo is nowhere near
this time. Not there. He's on a banana boat. All right. That's James Herbert. You can find him at Outside the NBA. I'm Matt Moore. You find me at Matt Moore CBS or at HP Basketball. Thanks for joining us all throughout this season. We will have much, much more. We will probably be back tomorrow with another podcast, and we will have lots and lots leading up to the draft, and then our favorite time of the year, free agency. Thanks for listening, everybody.